The Jets 53-man roster is set, and there's a lot to discuss with that. Cade Klubnik's the backup quarterback. Right move or wrong move? That and much more is what we're breaking down on today's Jets Collective, which starts right now. It's the first day of September, which means the Jets play regular season football this month. Hello, everyone. My name is Jake Asman. You're watching or listening to the Jets Collective right here on YouTube, wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, and iHeart. We are presented by Prize Picks. And as always, I'm joined alongside Rich Cimini and Brandon Tierney. Fellas, the 53-man roster is set. We got that to discuss. The practice squad, Jets Titans, is just 12 days away. Rich, you've covered a lot of these cutdown days. What was your experience with this one?
My experience is that we had to wait a long time until they put out the roster. It was about 9 o'clock. And I just to give the fans a little background, they do that strategically, the Jets. There were five other teams that did that. They don't like to advertise their names during the day for competitive reasons. So that's why we waited till 9 o'clock. But no surprises at all. I mean, this was the roster I think many of us expected. And they didn't cut a lot of big name players or no one got picked up on waivers by any other team, which I think is telling. But yeah, it went pretty much according to form as far as I'm concerned.
It's an interesting roster. It's still a work in progress here. You know, I would obviously the question is about actual cut day. I almost push it even further. And one of the things I've looked at on the show here, you know, whether it's the running back room, the tight end room, the O-line room, the linebacking room, which has gotten good, and the D-line room, you know, all of a sudden, not that there aren't issues, we'll discuss them, but the Jets at the very least have an interesting and in certain spots, pretty talented roster. So let's go.
The big story for me was the kicking situation, because we saw what happened last Friday night against the Giants after Chris Banjo told Rich Cimini that Jason Sanders won the kicking job. Well, that was short-lived with a missed extra point, a missed field goal from 54 yards that was at least 5-plus yards short. So you knew they were going to add a kicker. And one of the big takeaways, Rich, from the Jets roster is the waiver claim they put in for Groupie. Blake Groupie is now the Jets kicker, seemingly. Give us your breakdown on the kicking situation for the Jets.
Yeah, there'll be some, if he's a popular guy, there'll be some groupies, I guess, in the stands. But you knew they were going to make a move. They go get Groupie, who lost the kicking battle in Indianapolis. He's been a guy who's been in the league for a few years. He's about an 81 to 82% career success rate, which was, you know, 85% is considered good. He's got a strong leg. He's only 5'7", by the way. And when Aaron Glenn was asked about him yesterday, I loved his response. His first response was, he's small, said the 5'9" coach. So he's got experience in the league, but a couple of possible red flags. You know, he's only played on indoor teams, Indianapolis and New Orleans. He's never attempted a kick in a temperature below 40 degrees. So that'll be a new experience for him. But all things considered, they had to do something. You couldn't go into the season with Jason Sanders. Sanders is now on the practice squad. So I guess insurance policy. But look, I think they counted five different, I made a list before we went on the air. I think they've had five or six different kickers this offseason looking to replace Nick Folk. And I think they did okay under the circumstances, but it's still not a great situation.
I wouldn't stun me if they have a sixth at some point here, you know, if things go sideways with Groupie. This is embarrassing. I mean, I've lauded a lot of the moves by Muji here. Obviously needs to find the quarterback probably next draft, depending upon how Cade Klubnik plays. I'm sure we'll get back to that as well. But when you have a kicker in the most pristine, benign conditions, not a drop of moisture, no humidity, which is going to keep the ball from going a little bit further. It's not snowing. It's not rainy. There's nothing. I mean, what is the equivalent of an NFL kicker coming up at least 5 yards short? What is that, like a major league pitcher throwing an 81-mile-per-hour fastball? Like, it's so substandard, it's alarming. And the fact that it got to this point is really embarrassing and really unacceptable. So hopefully this pivot works out. Otherwise, not to be, you know, I'm prone to hyperbole here, but I mean, there's a chance this could destroy their season. I expect a lot of tight games. And if the kicker is not good, the Jets have massive issues. They're not good enough to work around that.
We've just seen too many examples, unfortunately, in Jet history where, you know, seasons are altered by ineptitude at the kicker spot. I think a couple of years ago, the 2024 season with Aaron Rodgers is a prime example of that. I don't know if Robert Saleh gets fired if, let's say, Greg Zuerlein hits that kick in the rain to beat the Denver Broncos, right? I mean, and there were several other games that year where their kicking situation cost them. I go back 2019, the Adam Gase debut game. They're up 16-0 on the Bills, and Kareem Vevick is shanking kick after kick. That cost the Jets that day, and I won't even go down, you know, the Doug Bryan path or wherever else, you know, this fan base wants to go. But it could be a real problem. I'll give the Jets the benefit of the doubt from the standpoint of a year ago. They moved on from Thomas Morstead, and they figured it out with Austin McNamara. I think Chris Banjo's really good at special teams coordination, so I'm hoping that, you know, Groupie could be their guy. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't concerned, because I just think the margin for error for the Jets is so razor thin. You can't be losing any games because of your kicker. That could cost several people in the organization their job at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that decision goes above Chris Banjo. I don't think he's making the final call on which kicker they keep. It's been a revolving door, except for the 1 year Zuerlein had, which was good. And then, of course, Folk last year. But in between, it's just been a lot of, you know, kicking carousel and crazy names and, you know, Lenny Craig, Cade York, Will Ferrin, Younghoe Koo. Remember him? He was on the team for about a minute and a half this offseason. Jason Sanders and now Blake Groupie. So, you know, we talked about this before, and I agree with BT. I think they miscalculated on Nick Folk. I think, you know, there was about $1 million, $1.5 million difference in guarantees. He obviously took the more money, which I don't blame him for. He goes to Atlanta. And I think the Jets just felt that he was old and that he was about to fall off a cliff. And I don't know. If it were me, I would want to have, like, the known quantity, you know, in Nick Folk, a dependable guy, than going out into the wilderness here and looking for some trying to strike, like, you know, look for gold.
Me too. I mean, listen, guys, if it's a situation where the Jets are so strapped for cash in terms of salary cap, they're up against it, and the retention of somebody like Folk means, you know, an offensive lineman that they really value is going to be out the door, or even, you know, name any position that you want. I mean, that would be a little bit more acceptable, but they are absolutely flush with cash. It's really dispiriting because, you know, like, the kicker's almost taken for granted. I will figure it out. Anybody could punt. Anybody can make a 40-yarder. But, and all of the energy that we talk about going into the draft and free agency is about the sexy skill positions. Get the guy on the edge. Get the guy who can win on the outside, one-on-one receiver. Get the quarterback. Find the corner who can shut people down. And the thing that we just really don't give a lot of attention to, again, it very well might destroy seems overly dramatic, but I don't think that it is. And the fact that, you know, you had somebody in the building who could kick outside, could kick up in Buffalo, could kick in the slop down in Miami, up in New England. It's, you know, eventually we got to move past this and stop crying about it. But it's a point of inflection. If things go awry, this will be a point that we go back to a lot. So as long as Muji's ready for that, then that's okay, because it's coming.
Here's one thing I've always wondered, and this is not even just the Jets that don't do this. I question why every team in the league doesn't do this. We see all the time these sixth and seventh round picks in the draft turn out to be nothing.
Yep.
I would draft whoever the top kicker is in college football every year in the sixth or seventh round. I don't see the harm in it, especially if you're a team like the Jets where you had multiple day three late in the draft selections. Mm-hmm. I just don't see the harm in just trying to take a chance each year, whoever the top kicker is. If it doesn't work out, no one's going to blame you if you cut a sixth or a seventh rounder. No fan would care. But like the Jets, they took VJ Payne, for example, with their seventh round selection this year. He's hurt. He's on short-term IR. Who knows when we ever see him? Like, you can't tell me that taking, you know, Trace Smack, whoever the top college kicker was this past year, wouldn't potentially pay off more than a seventh round safety. So it's not even just a Jet thing. I don't know why more teams don't use seventh round picks on just trying to take the best kicker possible.
I agree with you as a concept. I think it's a little more, it depends on the team, like the specific needs. Like, some teams get the benefit of the doubt. Not that you're making moves based on public sentiment, at least you shouldn't be. But also, you know, a bad team like the Jets, I mean, there's been a lack of depth. I mean, when you're so bad for as long as they've been, teams like the Browns, the Giants trying to pull their way out of the wilderness, the Raiders, you know, the Dolphins now. Like, I get it. Not that there's many six-rounders that will pop, but I think it's a little more justifiable to get somebody in the trenches, throw a dart against the board, a big-bodied guy, or somebody who's fast but doesn't have great refined skill at the receiver or at the corner spot. It's a little tougher to sell unless you get it right, But I agree with you. But I do think if you're a team light on depth like the Jets have been, it's a little tougher sell. A little bit, not much though. It's a good point, Jake.
Yeah, two things on that. When these GMs treat these late round picks, sixth and seventh rounders, like gold chips, you know. So we may kind of minimize the value of them. They don't. They see players. You know, they see, you know, backup safeties and backup linebackers. And number two, I've talked to some scouts who say it's kind of hard to project a college kicker into the pros because the ball's different, the goalposts are different. And so it doesn't always translate. You know, a guy who's great in college may not be in the NFL, and they always feel like they could pick up these guys, you know, off the street, basically. So those are just two thoughts on it. The Giants picked up the kid from Michigan and who won the job this year. And he was coming off a down year at Michigan. You know, the year before he was really good. Giants took a chance, and it looks like they struck gold with, you know, because he looks like a pretty good kicker.
And that's a guy that'll take a chance of. Like, he's kicking at the big house in front of 110,000 people. He's at the Horseshoe, you know, Northwestern. All, you know, yeah, it gets cold up there. It's always gray. It's windy, all that stuff. Yeah, in a lot of ways, and while we focus on the Jets' gaffe or potential gaffe here, because it's a Jets show, the Jets aren't alone here. Like, I would liken the kicking market very similar to maybe not the closer role, although to an extent, but more like the middle relief role than baseball. It's just very volatile. I don't know why there's such a high rate of volatility. One year, the guy's got a 5.1 ERA, and then the next year he's like 2.2. He's an all-star. There's these wild fluctuations, probably similar to golf as well, where some, I don't mean like the Scheffler, like the best ones, but the guys below that where they go up and down, up, putter's hot, no, it's not, driver's fairway, no, it's not. It's such a specialty move that, and it's really hard to replicate the game conditions, that there's just, there's a lot of hit or miss. It's one of those, it's one of the rare positions in sports that seems easy, and it's really not.
Yeah.
It's not.
You're watching especially the Jets Collective? Yeah, nothing's easy for the Jets. Kicking aside, everything is difficult for this team, but hopefully that changes starting week one. Hit the like button if you're joining us. Make sure you are subscribed to the Jets Collective here on YouTube. We are approaching 5,000 subscribers, so make sure you click the subscribe button and help us out. You always can consume the show on Spotify, Apple, or iHeart if you prefer to listen to it after the fact. The other big decision that we've been talking about for months on the show has been backup quarterback for the Jets. Aaron Glenn came out and made it official yesterday. Cade Klubnik will be QB2 to start the season. Rich, your thoughts on Klubnik after what you've seen from him all summer, being named the backup to Geno Smith?
Well, it's certainly not a surprise. I mean, he was the number two quarterback all summer. He played okay in the preseason games. I mean, he did have the bad pick against the Giants. He did okay in practices. But, you know, you thought maybe it was an outside chance that they would try to do something for a veteran down on the final cutdown. They obviously did not do that. I think there's two factors here. And I don't agree with – I think we've talked about this before. I would have got a veteran backup during the offseason in March and April when there were a couple of guys available. Now it's really hard to pull a rabbit out of your hat. So they kind of – went with Klubnik, you know, they made their bed and they're going to sleep in it now. And I think one of the reasons is, and this is interesting, I think as the number two quarterback, you know, he's going to get more practice reps than he would as the number three quarterback and or a practice squad. And they feel that will help his development. So they're kind of fast tracking him here, which is very interesting to me. I think maybe in the back of their minds, if, you know, they're thinking maybe later in the season, we could get him ready to start some games if we fall out of contention. Now, I don't think they're planning on falling out of contention. I know coaches don't think that way, but they are fast-tracking him here because it would have been very easy to go out and get a veteran and just make Klubnik your third quarterback, and so they're not doing that. I think they trust him. I think Frank Reich has a huge role in this. He really believes in Cade Klubnik, and they think he has uncommon poise for a rookie, and so they're going with him. I think it's very risky. I would not take that risk, but that's the route they have chosen.
But this is probably the item that we've hit the most on the show, really. It's going back to the draft shows, you know, do you take a flyer on Ty Simpson? What else do you do? And then obviously Klubnik, round four, moving up 18 spots to get him. There's a couple of things here. What did you say? The fast tracking, that's the term that Rich used. Yeah, I would agree. Problem is they might be fast tracking him for a different regime if they win four games this year. But you're right. They don't think that. Fans could think that. We could speculate. They're not. inherently thinking about we're going to lose. So let's show them that respect. I know we all will. In terms of answering the question directly, am I surprised he's number two? No, because that was the tone that was pretty much established based on what we heard, whether it was Reich, whether it was AG, whether it was Rich's reports every day from camp. Not that he was great every day, but there was certainly some more good than bad. So I'm not surprised he's QB2. Do I like it? I do. And the reason that I do like it, understanding that it could sabotage a couple of wins if he's not ready early, God forbid if Geno goes down, I want 100% intel. And I'm not ready to flush this year down the chute. I think the Jets can maybe mess around and win 8 games, maybe 9, whatever. Maybe I'm delusional. But at some point, when the rubber hits the road and the season becomes whatever it might become negatively, I need answers on this kid because it could directly impact what they do or will impact what they do next year on the quarterback market. So you try to thread the needle. Win now, compete now, appease the fans, do this, do that, develop this kid, fast track him. Yeah, a lot of irons in the fire. I do like it, though, and I do understand it.
The way I look at it is, if we have to see Cade Klubnik before the Jets bye week, which is week 13, either Geno Smith played horribly or played really poor where they just feel like they need to make a change, or he went down with an injury, because I don't think if the Jets are having a season that would be like their ideal scenario, you see Klubnik until they're way out of it and he's just playing out the stretch at the end of the year. What concerns me is if you're Aaron Glenn and you're trying to win games to save your job, you're now trusting a rookie to have to come in. If Geno Smith, let's say, gets concussed in week one and has to miss 2 games, has to miss the rest of week one, and then week two against Green Bay, you're now banking on a fourth-round rookie to go out there, step in, and save your job. Maybe in like week 10 he'd be able to do it, but I would be very worried about like asking Klubnik this early on in his rookie year to do it. Again, I understand it. They clearly like him. They traded up 18 spots for him. He's been their backup the entire summer. There's been no debate there. They're taking a calculated risk. I hope we don't see Club, because that means Geno hopefully is playing well and the team's winning games.
Well, let me ask you guys this, and Rich, if you want to jump on it first, like, by all means, go for it. What's more appealing? Like, what you know or what you don't know? Now, it depends on the subject and what you're evaluating, but specific to the possible quarterbacks that the Jets could have brought in that would have relegated Cade Klubnik to number three, at least to start. Like, what we know of those guys is that they're not needle movers, man. So it's not very appealing. If you gave me a name, and granted, quarterback interpretation is subjective, so you might like somebody and I don't, but if you give me, or vice versa, you give me a name, I haven't heard one name where I'm like, yep, that's a dude who could come in and win 2 out of 3 games or 3 out of 4 if Geno goes down and stabilizes the season. And because that guy I don't believe is out there, it's more appealing what I don't know than what I do know, if that makes sense to you, Rich and Jake.
Yeah, a couple of points. I'll give you some background informational stuff here. Right now, as we speak, there are 13 rookie quarterbacks on 53-man rosters around the NFL. Out of those 13 rookies, only 3 are number 2. Obviously, Fernando Mendoza in Las Vegas.
Yep.
Jalen Daniels, which is interesting, a rookie undrafted guy in Tampa Bay, and Cade Klubnik. Those are the only 3 rookies who are in number 2 roles as we speak.
Not even Ty Simpson's definitely 3?
Right now he's listed as 3.
Okay.
I mean, he possibly could be a 2. They got Stetson Bennett there.
Yeah.
The thing about Klubnik, and I understand where you're going, BT, but Klubnik was not a first-round pick. He was a fourth-round pick. And to be quite honest, a lot of people around the league thought that was a reach for the Jets. They thought he was going to go fifth, sixth round, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. So maybe the Jets know something that other teams didn't know, but that's what the league consensus was on him. Mm-hmm. And, yes, you're taking a retread. He's not going to move the needle. A guy like Andy Dalton, for instance. But Andy Dalton can get to the line of scrimmage and he can read a defense and he could get guys in motion and he could get the team into the right play. I don't know if Cade Klubnik is that advanced right now.
Okay. So sorry, Rich.
That's just basic 101. And that's not a shot on Cade Klubnik. That's a guy who's never been in an NFL game before. And if he thought preseason was moving quickly, it's 10 times faster in the regular season. And so there will be some severe growing pains if he has to go in for multiple weeks.
Understood. But Jake, I want clarity here. The same talent evaluators who Rich just said really had, you know, him pegged more fifth round, sixth round. That was a reach by the Jets. Are those the same dudes who were saying that he may go in the first round before last season? That's why I don't get wrapped up in that stuff. It's the fluctuations. It's ridiculous. There was a coming off a 36 touchdown, six pick, junior year. They're like, he might go in the first round. And now some people are saying, well, the Jets overreached. He's a fifth. Which one is it, man?
Probably well, he had a bad year. Fourth round. I mean, he had a bad year. So that changes someone's evaluation.
Understood. But I get that for sure. But that doesn't mean that their ultimate evaluation's right, because they obviously, many of them changed their, like, they had to see something that was very appealing, Jake, for him to be, at least on paper, a potential first round pick. That's a wild fluctuation. Not that you can't do it, but it doesn't mean it's gospel. That's all I'm saying.
The Jets clearly like him more than the general public, as Rich alluded to. I mean, you if you're a Jet fan, you have to just hope that Frank Reich's experience, Bill Musgrave, the quarterback coach, who's been around a very long time, Muji's a former college quarterback, if you want to reference that, that they just see some of those traits that maybe you couldn't see on tape in a bad situation last year in Clemson where he was playing through injury. I just go back to the fact that in a perfect world, we don't see him for most of the year, but the concern you have, and this is just the history of the Jets, you always end up seeing two quarterbacks have to play, and the doomsday scenario of Geno going down with a serious injury early, and then here's this rookie with no line of defense behind him. I guess it's Bailey Zappe on the practice squad right now. Mm-hmm. I'd at least try and get someone that's better than Zappe as QB3. Again, I'm looking at it through the lens of, like, the Jets coaching staff and, like, trying to win. The fan of me is like, all right, let's see Klubnik. If it doesn't work out, like, we're taking a quarterback anyway, and I'm not worried about Aaron Glenn's job. I'm just a fan who is just going to root for the Jets regardless. But, like, if I'm Glenn, I would not just want a rookie to be my back. I'd want some sort of veteran back there to at least push him.
Unless you think that he's really different, and they might think that.
I think the takeaway is that the Jets are really placing an emphasis on player development here, which I could totally get. Last year, when it was like a rebuild situation, I would get that. Now they're in the second year. You know, you're in the next stage. And I think it should be more, it's more than player development. And the other thing with Klubnik, as it pertains to Geno Smith, the one good thing here is Geno's been a pretty durable guy in his career. I looked it up. Over the last 4 years, when he's been a full-time starter, he's only missed four games over the last 4 years. Now, two of them did happen last year. He had a high ankle and a shoulder injury with the Vegas Raiders that he missed a couple of games. But for the most part, Geno's been a pretty durable guy.
Yeah, yeah. And but this goes back to, think about our reaction after the first preseason game, guys, right? We're like, well, why the hell didn't Cade Klubnik play more? If it's about evaluation and development, which I tend to agree, Rich, again, they're trying to thread that needle, a little risky game, but that's what they're trying to do, apparently. Well, then why not throw him out there for – you know, I mean, not that you can have Garrett Wilson out there necessarily for three series, but let him throw to Mason Taylor more. Let him play a little bit more in front of the three or four starters on the O-line. Let him hand it off to Braylon Allen. I don't know. If that was the goal, I think they fell a little bit short there. But it's go time, so this is what they're doing.
It's go time.
Yeah.
Speaking
learn
of go time.
Learn the game plan, kid, just in case you have to go in there. You know, you're only a sprained ankle away.
Yep. Well, if Cade has to go in there week one, I hope he comes in after Geno Smith throws a touchdown pass, guys, because I put together this prize pick lineup for week one of the Jets and the Titans, and I need both Geno and Cam Ward to each throw one a passing touchdown here for this to hit. This is a two-pick power play. It's $20 to win $32 over at Prize Picks. It's simple. Geno Smith, more than 0.5 passing touchdowns. Same for Cam Ward. They do that. This hits. What say you guys, BT? Is Geno and Cam going to throw at least one touchdown in this game that we're going to be watching?
Yes, I think that they will. Listen, I think I'll give you probably much more specific score, you know, my final score when we get to the before the game. But I think the Jets are going to win 24-20, 23-20, something like that. And, you know, I think to get to that amount of points, I do think that Geno will throw. I don't think he's going to go bonkers. I'd be stunned if he doesn't throw a touchdown. I think Cam Ward's an ascending, interesting young player who I think has some real tools and at least parts last year validated where he was drafted to an extent. Long way to go, but he's not a complete scrub. He's not a bust. So I'm going to go, check. Both over a half a touchdown, so both will throw at least one.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they'll both throw at least one in this game. Even though you got two defensive-minded head coaches in this game, they'd probably like to make it a ugly, low-scoring type game, but I do think there will be enough passing to put these guys in the over column in this particular category.
Make your Jets-Titans week one lineups now. There's a ton of options available. We'll talk more about some of the options over at Prize Picks every week on the show for the Jets' upcoming opponent. But use that code HMA when you sign up. Play your first $5 and get $150 in lineups if you win. If you guys have questions for those of you watching the show live, make sure you write them in. We will bookmark those for the end of the show. Super chats will definitely be read, so keep that in mind at the end. Rich, just taking a look at the roster right now, is there another move potentially coming in your opinion? I know last year Darren Mooji made several key trades at the end of training camp slash right around this time. Harrison Phillips, Jawan Briggs. You look at some of the teams that actually have four quarterbacks on their roster, so perhaps, you know, maybe there's a chance they still would add that veteran QB. Just give us a feel for anything you're hearing in terms of the state of this roster right now.
There are actually four teams with four quarterbacks on their roster. A little asterisk there. Cleveland has four, but Dylan Gabriel's on IR. So technically they have three on their 53. But Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and Atlanta also have four. You know, I think the Jets are – I mean, they're always looking. I know they looked even in the past few days. They talked about quarterbacks. They explored quarterbacks. And in the end, they decided that the best bet was to go with Klubnik. You never rule out a trade with Mooji. He's made 14 player trades in the last 12 months. So he's always looking. He's a very aggressive GM. We know that. I thought you saw him addressing two of the weaker areas in terms of depth with the offensive line. They made the trade for Jordan Meredith. We were even talking about it. I know the fans were thinking about it, how the interior offensive line depth was weak and needed to be addressed. He goes out and makes that trade to address it. This is a center guard combo player who's got a ton of – he started 11 games last year. He could come in a pinch. The only thing – it's not a great optic. It's like they signed another offensive lineman from the Raiders,
yeah,
along with Dylan Parham. It's the offensive line that allowed the most sacks in the league last year, so I get it. It's not a great optic. But I think in a backup role, this guy will be just fine. And the other position is linebacker. You know, he goes out and gets Trevin Wallace on waivers. I think part of that's because Michael Walker ended up on season-ending IR. So they go out and make that move. This guy was a third-round pick 2 years ago for Carolina. So you know there's some traits there. And he's played a lot of football. And they also picked up Reeder, the practice squad linebacker, who's played a lot of football. Got cut by Detroit in the offseason. He goes to the practice squad. He's certainly a guy who could get promoted the day before a game to the 53. So I thought Mooji did a good job of addressing a couple of their shakier depth area issues.
I've got a question, Rich. I genuinely don't know the answer. Let's say, and it's a logistical issue more. So if we debate, you know, should he be quarterback number two, the risk, all the things we just hit with Kate Klubnik, and obviously a couple of teams out there with four quarterbacks, not counting the IR. If they made a trade by, say, the end of the week, all right, so it's consummated, say, Friday afternoon, Jets trade for whomever for a sixth or a seventh round pick. They get him in the building that weekend, and then he's on the practice field. Would he even be up to speed enough to be QB2 week one against Tennessee, do you think?
You know, that would be tough. Like, just say, for instance, they traded for Andy Dalton.
Yep.
I mean, a guy like that probably could be, because he's familiar with Frank Reich's system from Carolina, and he's been around the league forever. He probably could. If it was a younger type player, like a Tanner McKee in Philadelphia, who hasn't seen as much, you know, maybe he needs a couple of weeks on, practice squad and, you know, getting practice reps. So it depends on the player. Not everyone's a Joe Flacco, right? Not everyone can roll off the couch and go out there and throw for 300 yards
like Philip Rivers last year.
Yeah.
5 years on the couch and comes in and plays.
Yeah. So not Vinny Testaverde did that once for the Jets. He was out. They called him in. He came that weekend and started against Tampa Bay at home and beat him. It's hard to find a quarterback who can do it that quickly. So if they were to make a quarterback trade, chances are he would not be the guy for week one. It would probably be, uploading him would take a little bit of time.
So Jake, why even do it? If Rich's timeline's right, and I'm sure it is, why even do it at this point?
Unless I just, yeah, I did, To me, it's just some insurance in case, like, Geno has that major injury and he's out. Yeah. I'm not saying it's going to be Rodgers-esque four plays, but, you know, if he's out a month, you know, I'd want to maybe get someone in there that could hold the ship and give us a chance at a season before it spirals out of control. Here's a name I thought of, Rich. He became available. He was just outright released. And I don't even think he's a very good quarterback, but he's young. He was a second-round pick. Will Levis, and at the bare minimum, you bring him in, and he's a guy that could maybe give you some intel on what Brian Daboll's offense looks like ahead of the matchup in week one.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't played in a couple of years because of the he had shoulder surgery last year, so he missed the year. He obviously thinks a lot of himself. I know he's had a couple of quotes this summer about how he's definitely one of the 32 best quarterbacks in the league. They passed on him. I mean, they could have had him on waivers, right? Because they had the second waiver priority. Vegas wasn't going to take him. Obviously, they have three quarterbacks. So the Jets had first dibs at Will Levis, and they said no thanks. So could they do a little gamesmanship and bring him in, you know, and, you know, pick his brain a little bit on Salah's? I mean, teams have been known to do that, of course. I would be surprised if they did it, though. I think they're going to go with what they have. Now, if Geno were to suffer a major injury, they obviously would have to go out and get a veteran-type quarterback. You remember when Rodgers got hurt? I think it was Trevor Siemian, right, that they went out and brought in?
Yes.
Yeah, because they had Zach Wilson as the backup, and they went out and got Siemian. If something were like that to happen, then they would probably go out and get a veteran-type guy and, you know, and work him in. But I'd be surprised if they went the Will Levis route. He's a turnover machine. I mean, geez,
they fit right
in a couple of years ago with the Jets. Remember the Jet game in Tennessee? So
yeah, he was awful that game.
Yes.
I wanted
he fumbled a few times.
I want every competitive advantage I could possibly get because of how important I believe this opening game is for the Jets. So that's more along the argument for bringing in Levis. Put him on the practice squad and just pick his brain. Say, hey, break down the Daboll playbook. What were they running with you? Like, show, put up the film and have them go through it.
I agree.
The defensive staff.
I agree. It seems petty. It seems like a reach, maybe in the eyes of some. I mean, anything that you can glean from somebody else's building, I don't know why the hell you wouldn't do it. I totally agree there, Jake. 100%. Go get him. And then cut him the next day, whatever, if he's not good.
He gets paid. Now, Zappi, it sounds like he's back, though, Rich. I know you were the first to report that he's on the practice squad, so it feels like
Zappi's back. Yeah, you know, I was stunned. I don't know how you guys feel that Brady Cook got claimed on waivers by the Dolphins. That was...
Well, they're trying to tank, Rich. That's why.
That, yeah, he's the tank.
He's the tank commander.
He's designated tanker. They got him and my guy from Syracuse, Kyle McCord. I mean, you talk Kyle about McCord. Shaky backup situations. But Miami, we know what they're doing this year, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's pretty obvious what that team is all about this year. So Brady Cook down in Miami, I did not have that on my bingo card, but whatever.
If you want to watch Brady Cook, maybe against the Jets at either the Jet-Dolphin matchups or any Jet game, use SeatGeek to get your tickets. Code COLLECTIVE10. Save 10% off tickets. I know there's a ton of Jet fans who are going to week one. A ton of Jet fans, of course, who will be at the home opener against Green Bay. If you're looking for seats, use code COLLECTIVE10. Download the SeatGeek app. The link is in the description down below. Here's another topic that broke in between the last time the three of us were on the air doing an episode. Jason Lockenfora, who for many years covered the NFL for CBS as an insider, he's now writing about the league for casino.com or casino.org. But in the article, he had a report that Woody Johnson has already started to do his homework on Mike Tomlin as a possible candidate. Rich, what were your thoughts on that and anything you could share just on that story that came out from Jason Lockenfora?
You know, I don't like criticizing people's work, but I do not believe that Woody Johnson is doing homework on Mike Tomlin already. I don't believe that for a second.
What's the homework assignment? You know, Mike Tomlin, like, could be the homework? A great coach. Like,
I mean, you could go on profootballreference.com and see his record. It takes about 5 seconds to do that. The guy's a good coach. He never had a losing season in Pittsburgh. He's going to be in demand after his 1 year in television. Maybe it'll be 2 years in television. We don't know. I certainly think if the Jets were to be interested, I would be stunned if he went to the Jets. I think there'll probably be other opportunities for him out there. But I don't think the Jets are doing homework on potential candidates, I think that story was a stretch. And I just think it's a stretch. I don't think there's any truth to it.
Yeah, Rich biting his tongue a little bit here. I saw that. That was the biggest non-story of the week. Like, the Jets might have a little interest in Mike Tomlin. No shit. Mike Tomlin's a tremendous coach. He's available whenever he wants to stop doing TV. And, you know, and the head coach that the Jets currently employ was a disaster last year. So, you know, I'll stop short of saying, you know, I don't know. I mean, I know Jason. I actually did TV with Jason for about 7 years on CBS Sports Network. Always had a cordial relationship with him. I don't know how connected he still is, and I'm not here to refute that. That's not my job. But even if he is right, it means nothing because it's common sense. And if he is wrong, it doesn't mean it can't change on a dime because, once again, the circumstances that could be born out of the season could also change. So listen, Tomlin's a stud. If the Jets need a coach, they'll be making the call. Whether it's already been made, I tend to believe not, but I'm not a journalist. What do I know?
Even if they were doing due diligence on potential candidates, Woody Johnson doesn't do that. He has people who, you know, in his inner circle who do that. So, I just thought that was amusing myself.
But amusing, that's an interesting word. Amusing. I got you. But don't you think that this, forget about Jason's report, but don't you think that's a bigger issue with the Jets? What you just said there, Rich, like, Woody doesn't do that. He has people who does it for him. And you don't have to name names, obviously. Who are these people? Because they don't seem to be very good at their job. And I think that's part of the problem when we sit there and say, well, Woody's not a good owner, which he has not been thus far. Little success early, clearly, but I don't think he's got a lot of contacts. I don't think he's got a lot of juice around the NFL. It always seems like they're asking Charlie Casserly's opinion or Peyton Manning's opinion. Like, what people does he have? Like, he's actually got respected people who could get answers and deliver somebody like Mike Tomlin if he has to. I doubt it, but again, I'm not a journalist, so I'm asking. I don't know.
Yeah, he paid Mike Tannenbaum a fortune last year to run a search for him. You know,
So I'm not really talking about, you know,
Mike. I mean, but I like New York Mike Game Day this Sunday. ESPN like New York. Rich Cimini will be joining us throughout the season.
Yeah, you get, that's a great show. I catch that on. I hear it. It's awesome. You guys do a good job.
The there. Three Musketeers back together on that one. I'm sure Mike can't wait to have me back. But so no, that, I mean, obviously we all know that Woody Johnson hired Mike's firm, the 33rd team, to do all the vetting and the research and the statistical analysis and yada, yada, yada. They ended up interviewing, what, like 20 candidates for the head coaching job and GM job. So, that's what he typically does, Woody Johnson.
I mean, the story to me would be a bigger deal if it's like the Jets would have no interest in Mike Tomlin. You know, like, of course you should be interested in Mike Tomlin. The Jets haven't won more than 7 games in a decade. Mike Tomlin has had 18 years as a coach. He's never once had a losing season. So, yeah, of course the Jets should be interested in Tomlin or Sean McDermott or whoever the top candidates are. But I just thought the story was crazy because also in the story it's, it could be a Mike Tomlin, Lamar Jackson combination for the Jets. And I think we are so far away from that even being a possibility in the slightest with Tomlin, let alone trading then for Lamar Jackson. I don't buy it. I think it's people around the NFL just speculating to Jason, and he ran with it in the story. But the bottom line is Aaron Glenn and the Jets could change the entire narrative about the upcoming offseason by just winning games and turning it around, which is, I hope, what every Jet fan is rooting for this year.
To start.
Yeah, he can afford to be very selective. And I just looking at it quickly, I don't think there's going to be a lot of openings next year. You know, there were a lot this year, last couple of years. So there may not be as many. And I looked and I saw maybe like 3 or 4 possibilities. Certainly Tampa and Minnesota would be places that I think Tomlin would be more interested in than the Jets. So I don't think the Jets are ever going to get the top candidate on the market. And if they were in the market. So
Can I give you a devil's advocate to that, Rich, on how they actually could? One, it's New York. They got plenty of what he's got.
Well, you're going to say the draft picks, right?
Right. If let's say it's Arch Manning lives, whoever the top quarterback is, and the Jets are in position to actually get that guy. Like, I think you'd make yourself an extremely attractive destination if there's a real plan to get a quarterback on top of the cap space, 2 additional first round picks. I'm not saying it's likely. I just think this could be an attractive job. I know when they hired Saleh, he was thought to be one of the top candidates of that hiring cycle, and they got him. Same with Bowles. Like, they have gotten the top guy in the past, and I don't think Woody's cheap. I think he'd pay someone like that if the Jets actually had a realistic shot at getting that head coach, yeah, whoever that might be.
Well, that certainly would be appealing if they had one, you know, the top three, picking in the top three with the extra first round picks. But I think there's around the league, I think there's just candidates are always a little concerned about the structure of the Jets hierarchy and how that works. And so I think that's always gives candidates, pause.
As it should. It goes back to what I just said about Woody. I mean, you talk about the structure. I mean, who owns the team? Who's in charge of the structure and the restructuring? I mean, to me, and I'm with you, Jake, when you lay that out, and I've said the same thing on my show. You're talking about three first-round picks. You're talking about a young, talented roster already. You're talking about New York. You're talking about, a lot of – I do think Woody would pay. This is one of the few times where I actually think that the Jets could be incredibly appealing to somebody who's already won. Those other guys, Bulls, you're talking about assistants, Saleh, assistant D coordinator, high profile – to get the big fish. Last time that happened was Parcells, and that wasn't Woody. That was Leon Hess.
Leon Hess, I mean, he finally got fed up with enough losing and said, I'm going to cut some corners here and go right to Parcells. We're not going to interview anyone else. I'm going to tamper if I have to, which I'm sure he did. And he went right to Parcells. He got his guy. And I think Hess was a big reason why Parcells picked the Jets, because the Giants were also after Parcells then too. Not many people know that, but they were trying to get him at that particular time to come back. And Leon Hess and Parcells just hit it off. And, wow. Parcells just had an immense amount of respect for Leon Hess, maybe because they're both Jersey guys or whatever. And that was a big reason why Parcells picked the Jets under those circumstances.
I didn't even know about the Giants stuff. That's a nice little nugget there. And I don't mean this flippantly. I mean, rest in peace. And Leon was, by all accounts, a really good man. But when you say outside of the Jersey roots, when you say he had a lot of respect for Leon, again, I don't mean to sound like that guy, but why? I mean, the team was in the toilet. They were atrocious. Why did he have all this respect for Leon Hess?
It's a really good question, BT, because you would think that looking at it, but I have talked to dozens and dozens, maybe even 100 like former Jets players over the years. And I can't come across like one guy who said anything negative about Leon Hess. And he just, he stayed out of the way, which coaches love and GMs love. He let people do their jobs. He was a real person. He was a self-made billionaire, I guess. Mm-hmm. He was, with the Hess Oil Company from nothing, yep, building it into an empire. And he just had a way about him. He just had a charisma that affected people. And that's why he hit it off. Parcells, I think this story's been out there, but that came so close to becoming the Giants head coach. Like, I'm talking a matter of minutes, like with phone calls going back and forth between George Young and Fossil and Giants ownership. I don't want to get into the whole thing, but it came really close. It came really close there.
Interesting. Wow. The only follow-up I have before we move on here, I'm going to get to your Q&A at the end. So for the 412 people tuned in live right now, if you have questions, fire them in the chat, and we will bring some of them up on the screen. We saw the Giants, who never have changed their organizational structure, acquiesce to exactly what Harbaugh wanted, with Harbaugh reporting to the owner and not the GM. So I wonder, I'm not saying that Woody would do this for Tomlin or McDermott or whoever, but I do wonder if the right scenario presented itself, if this coach would be interested in the Jet job but would be uncomfortable with the way the Jet structure is, if that coach would be able to do what Harbaugh just did with the Mara family and get the structure basically however he saw fit, if that's Tomlin or whoever.
Well, the Jets do have the same structure as the Giants.
So when you say like people are concerned about the structure, then what is that in reference to?
I was referring to ownership. So just and how much ownership gets involved in the structure is the same. I mean, Aaron Glenn reports to Woody Johnson, just like John Harbaugh reports to the Maras and the Tishes. So that the structure. I mean, some people say we overanalyze that structure and that it doesn't really mean much, but yet Harbaugh felt it was important enough to have in his contract, and that almost blew up the deal at the end there. He had to have that in his contract. So evidently it's more than just something on a piece of paper, but the Jets do have that structure. Both Muji and Glenn report directly to ownership,
which was different than Douglas overseeing Saleh in the previous regime. But I mean, could Tomlin in this scenario then, Rich, just be like, you have to stay out of the way. What are you? You're not allowed in the facility at these hours when I'm there. Like, how crazy could we?
You know, I mean, Tomlin could just come in and say, you know, if I come there, you got to give me the keys to the kingdom, and I'm doing everything. You know, I'm in charge.
Hefty with Parcells.
Yeah, like Parcells. You know, Parcells was in charge of the food in the cafeteria. I mean, everything. You know, I don't even know if they had a cafeteria back then, but. He, you know, the first thing he did was he built that practice bubble at Hofstra. You know, Parcells is like, if I come here, you got to build a bubble. And sure enough, they built the bubble. So,
yeah.
Now everybody
when you want somebody, you make the concession. St. John's did the same thing with Patino. He's like, all right, if I'm coming here, I need X amount of money for NIL, and I need this, and I need all the games at the Garden, and I need first-class charters, and I need first, like, they're like, yep, we're desperate. Come, here you go. And once it's in the contract, it's in the contract. It's easily enforceable.
No doubt. Q&A coming up, but first, a word from one of our brand new sponsors, Courtyard. The Jets Collective is brought to you by Courtyard. If you're into sports cards, this is one of the coolest ways I've seen to collect. Courtyard lets you rip digital packs that contain real graded cards. Every card is PSA, CGC, or BGS graded. And this is the fun part. We're actually ripping a pack right now, live on the Jets Collective. Here we go. A football master pack, $100. We're going to open it, and we're going to see which card will be up for grabs for a listener of the Jets Collective to win. Wow. A Mean Joe Green, 1971, Topps card, pro football legend, pro football Hall of Famer. That's our big purchase from our football master pack here on Courtyard. Be sure to sign up for Courtyard using the link in our bio and use code HMA for 15% off your first purchase. Comment your username for a chance at this awesome Mean Joe Green card, and we'll announce the winner at the end of the month. Thanks again to Courtyard for sponsoring the Jets Collective. If you're not watching live, comment those usernames down below so the people at HMA can sort through it. You guys ready for a little Q&A from the audience here?
Yeah, always. Best part. Let's go.
Here we go. Super Chats will go first. Shout out to the big fella for this one. He says, Rich, please tell me why the Jets are so enamored with Arian Smith. He has done nothing. Yes, he is fast, but if that was the only requirement, Usain Bolt should be in the NFL Hall of Fame. Makes zero sense.
Yeah, I never thought for a second that Arian Smith was in danger of not making the team, and there's a reason for that. He was a fourth-round pick. You know, they're not going to cut a draft pick the second year. The same goes to Malachi Moore. Malachi Moore hasn't lived up to expectations, but he was a fourth-round pick, and so they're going to keep him around. Arian Smith plays on special teams. He's a good gunner. You're right. He has not developed as a wide receiver. He dropped a lot of passes this summer. Crazy thing is, from what I heard, you know, when the Jets evaluated him going to the draft, they thought, obviously, they liked him a lot. Most teams thought he was about a seventh-rounder. The Jets envisioned him as like a future number two receiver. You know, that's how highly they thought of Arian Smith. And so I didn't think for a second they were going to pull the plug after 1 year.
Oof. I mean, what the hell are they looking at? I don't even know how to respond to that. I mean, second receiver. I mean,
it's disingenuous, too, because last year they caught Malachi Corley, who they didn't draft, but he was a third-round pick going into year two. Got rid of him because they didn't draft him, and it was about just who are the best players. This year, you can't sell me on Arian Smith deserving a roster spot other than the reason Rich already brought up. They took him in the fourth round, and they don't want it to look bad that they cut a fourth rounder after just one season.
And Malachi Corley was a guy that, I don't know about you boys, but I was excited when they got him. Like the Yak King, right? I'm thinking, you know, a little three-yard slip screen and making people miss and running through people, moving the sticks. Here we go. I actually was pretty excited when they drafted him. Didn't work out. What a stunner.
That's a classic example of the, like, a front office and scouts not doing their homework on a player because he didn't have a good attitude. He came in with a sense of entitlement. You saw the whole thing with the Davante Adams with the jersey and everything like that. I think that's kind of a little glimpse into what Malachi Corley was all about.
Didn't want to play special teams either, right, Rich? Wasn't it a big issue for him? Right?
I don't recall that. Maybe it was. I'm not recalling that specifically right now, but he just wasn't. He was a big fish in a small pond at Western Kentucky. He had some great yak numbers in college. We all wrote about it. I wrote about it. I did a big story on him, and it was kind of a cool story from a really tiny small town in Kentucky. And he just came in with this, you know, entitlement and turned off the veterans right away. I know it turned off the coaches, and that's why they got rid of him. And he really hasn't done anything in the league. I don't know if he's on a roster right now.
Nothing.
Doc Jet Fan writes in, fellas, is there any concrete timetable for Pons, Brees, Davis, Sadiq to return to the practice field? If not, week one is in jeopardy. So basically, injury report time from Doc Jet Fan, so the name is fitting. Rich, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, Brees Hall, I believe, will be ready for week one against Tennessee. Sadiq was practicing. He was doing some positional drills yesterday, which was a big step for him. He's back. I think he'll practice next week. I think he'll be good to go. Now, Davis has missed, what, like 3 weeks now with the knee injury? I saw him off to the side yesterday. I guess he's going to be – I might get to be he's inactive for week one, and the same goes for D'Angelo Pons. Still has not practiced. I don't see how he dresses for the game against Tennessee. It would be unfair to take a rookie with no training camp and throw him out there. So my guess is he would be inactive as well. The injury we didn't talk about that Doc Van Jet didn't mention, Joseph Asai is going to be out, I believe, at least a few weeks. They're calling it week to week. He's got a plantar fascia injury on his foot, which Glenn said it's not a long-term injury, but yet they're calling him week to week. I would not be shocked that if he ends up on short-term IR somewhere between now and the start of the Tennessee game.
You know what's amazing? Like, I probably should have studied medicine. I'd make a whole lot more money doing it. With all the surgeries that I've had, Tommy John, back surgery, ruptured Achilles, I've had it all, right? And I found it really interesting the way Aaron actually described the plantar fasciitis injury, where, you know, generally the worst thing you want to hear is it's a full rupture or it's a full tear. But based on the plantar and the fascia, like just the location and the healing process, that's like the one injury that you actually want it to be worse than almost halfway, because the healing process is a cleaner process. And I know, Rich, you touched on this as well, but I found that interesting. Like, that's counterintuitive to most medical situations, right?
Yeah. Well, according to AI, that's a little bit of a myth about the whole, the full tear versus the minor, the partial tear. But I did talk to someone who said that is absolutely true. And I think Eli Manning may have had that injury at some point in his career.
In 07, the Super Bowl year, he played through it.
Yeah, and indicated the same thing, that a full tear was better than a partial. So I'm not a doctor. And so we'll see. I mean, the bottom line is they do expect him to play again this year, but I just think it's probably, if I had to guess, I would say like a 4-week IR stay.
Rich, one more thing on Sadiq. You lay it out well, and it's going to be impossible, I think, for Pons to get out there week one. I know Sadiq is on the field. You've written about it. We've seen some video. Do you actually think he gets out there and plays a couple of plays against Tennessee? He's going to be in uniform, like dressed and going?
I think so.
Nice. Yeah.
I mean,
my guy. Okay.
You know, I think Frank Reich was pretty good about that. I think it was last week. He was just saying, obviously, it's going to be a smaller workload than normal. They're going to have to bring him along slowly. But I think there are plays that they could do with him, you know, a smaller package of plays. You know, they have a practice tomorrow, and then they have a practice on Monday, because this is basically their bye week. So, and then next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, it is full Tennessee mode. You know, they will be into the Tennessee game prep. So he'll have 5 practices before the game.
Mm-hmm.
And if all goes well, I could see him having a small package of plays.
And what happened with Rucker? Because as Sadiq came back, Rucker was out, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, he came out late to the practice field. I do not have an update on that. I do not believe that's a serious injury. He was walking around right outside the practice field. So typically when a player is out there, it's not too serious. It's when you don't see them that it becomes worrisome.
I don't quite understand this Pons injury. Aaron Glenn, I went back and read the transcript from July 29th when he was asked about Pons' injury. He said he's got a calf, he'll be fine, and he's yet to practice. So
yeah,
did he have a setback, Rich? Like, why has D'Angelo Pons not yet been out there at all the entire summer, basically?
Yeah, I mean, well, he will be fine. I mean, at some point.
He's not dead. He's alive.
Yeah, it's been 6 or 7 weeks I don't know about you guys, but you know, I've pulled calf muscles playing softball, and those things, those suckers take a while to, I'm still getting over one right now as we're speaking, and it's been a few weeks. So it's, it takes a while. I'm not sure if he had a setback. I'd be really surprised though, if he's out there. I don't see how you can play him against another team.
I've had those as well, but Rich, we're not like 21 years old, chiseled from granite and look like Zeus. I mean, I would think that his recuperative powers would be a little bit better than they have been. I mean, it
we
is
also
it
don't
is.
Have the resources, the rehab, and the stim and the light therapy and all the stuff they go through. You're like 24/7 rehab.
That's true.
We don't have that either. But
But I would advise Glenn to stop talking about injuries. This is kind of Jake what you're saying when you go back to the transcript now. You can't just say no comment, but just say we'll give you an update when we have it. Just keep it benign and keep it moving. Even you know, and who knows if Chad or AI is right about this. It might be about the plantar. You read one thing, you heard something else. Like, dude, don't play doctor. You're the head coach. If you're not 100% sure, keep the small fires from becoming bigger ones and speak about what you know. I think that would really serve him well as a second-year head coach.
Well, he had the whole press conference last year when – he did the old ask Rich thing after Rich reported accurately about Garrett Wilson going on IR. So, I mean, Rich, is your thoughts on how Glenn discusses injuries with you guys? Is there anything noticeably different year over year?
Well, I mean, we want him to talk about injuries because it helps us do our job. It helps us get information out to the fans. For the most part, he's right. I don't think he lies about injuries. He's giving us the information he has. And, you know, could he be a little more clear on certain things like the plantar fascia thing? Yeah, probably. But, you know, coaches don't want to put out a ton of information either for competitive reasons. So it's a delicate balance. I like when he talks about injuries because it helps us do our job. But on the other hand, you know, sometimes I don't think he deliberately misleads us. I think sometimes it's just not as clear as it needs to be.
And just to clarify, I don't think he does it deliberately either. It's not a character assassination. It's just maybe getting into the weeds of stuff he doesn't necessarily fully know.
Yeah. It's like a game of telephone. Sometimes the trainer tells the coach and he's passing it along to us. So, you know, you lose some stuff in translation.
Last chance to get your question read. Super chats will be read, so send those in. We have almost 500 people in the room right now watching, so make sure you like this video. Help get those likes up and make sure you subscribe to the Jets Collective here on YouTube. Kyle Clifton writes in, Pro Football Focus had Vegas tackles near the bottom of the NFL. Interior was okay. Meredith, that's Jordan Meredith, actually rated higher at center than Myers. So, Rich, based on your research into Jordan Meredith, and what type of role will he have with the Jets? Is he just going to be primarily a backup, or is there a path for him to actually be a starter by the end of the season?
Yeah, I don't think he'll be a starter unless there's an injury. I got kind of mixed reviews on Meredith. He was ranked 8th among centers last year in pass block win rate, which is a metric we use at ESPN, which was higher than Myers. So that was, you know, you look at that and you say, okay, that's encouraging. On the other hand, just from talking to people who know the Raiders, they weren't as high on him as that statistic would indicate. I went back and watched some preseason film. He was playing center. Actually, I think he was at guard in the fourth quarter of the last preseason game. So he was a guy who probably was going to get cut. I was told that he's actually better at guard than center. And so he gives them the position flex there at guard center. Xavier Newman did not have a good camp. His shotgun snaps were all over the place. And so I think this was actually a good move, an upgrade. He's not a Pro Bowl player. He's probably not even a starting level player, but he's a good backup for them, and that's what they needed.
I like that stat from ESPN. I've seen it quite a bit. I'll reference it here and there. Do you know, because if you're top 10 in pass block win rate, I mean, that's really good, even if it's a bit misleading. What is he in terms of the run block win? It's got to be horrible. Otherwise, he'd be a star, right?
I mean, yeah, I don't have that one at, you know, I don't have that one handy. But look, he probably was going to get cut by the Raiders. I mean, I don't think that's any great revelation. Most guys who are playing in the fourth quarter of the last preseason game are on very thin ice. The Jets just ID'd him as a player who, you know, had the position flexibility, who could come in, bring starting experience, and learn the system quickly. And that's why they felt like they could give up a sixth round pick for him.
Matt hates anything Boston with our final super chat. And then we have a great story coming your way from Rich Cimini to wrap up our show. Matt says, I believe the Jets are a 6-win team with Geno and a healthy Garrett last year. Better team now. I see a 7-8 win team. Thoughts? So, BT, if Geno's the quarterback last year and Garrett never gets injured, how many wins are the Jets a year ago?
I think Matt's kind of in the neighborhood of where I'd be hanging out as well. I mean, they won 3 with Brady Cook. I mean, you tell me you're not going to win 2 more with Geno. So I think that they very well might have. I think the linebacking core is better. A lot of the areas that they've enhanced, the tight end room is going to be really interesting to me. You know, and listen, like to me this year, I just look at, and Jake, I got to be honest, when you first said 3 months ago, must win week 1, you know, you took a lot of slack. I'm like, ah, come on, buddy. What are you, a little bit over the top? And the more I think about this, while I'm not 100% with you, it does shape the way the schedule goes. It's a much more poignant, I think, point than maybe I originally thought. Because if they win week 1, you know, suddenly no Parsons, no Josh Jacobs, home opener. If you're going to MetLife 1-0 with a whiteout, with those sick uniforms and 80,000 Jet fans actually enthusiastic about something real, and you were to win that game, I know it's a big if, and I know I'm putting things forward here. But once you get past the other two NFC North teams, the Lions and the the Vikings at the back end, and the Bears. Thank you. Then you're going. You've got what, the Browns, and you've got some. Then you got the Dolphins. You got the Raiders. Like, you can look up and have 5 wins for the Jets a lot earlier than anybody could possibly envision if you start 2-0.
I think they could be 4-4 through 8. If you could tell me they could beat the Titans, well, then I could see them beating the Browns, the Dolphins, and the Raiders. I also could see them losing to these teams because those teams are looking at the Jets the same way we look at them as winnable games. So that's why I just think week 1 is so important, because you put to bed the 0-7 start last year. You get the win over Salah. The Jets seem to always lose the revenge game. Last year was Rodgers. You go through history, they always lose that game. I just think it'd be huge for the building just to get a win early and say last year happened, it's over with, it's new staff, new quarterback, things are different, and maybe you could win one of your next 3 before you play the Browns with a chance to go 3-2 to start the year, which would be incredible given what the expectations were for this team by everyone outside of the Jet fan base.
But Rich, the other teams, and it's an interesting point, and I hear you, like, all right, the Raiders aren't saying, oh, we got the Jets, that's a layup. The Browns aren't saying, okay, even though we lost to the Jets in the rain last year, we can't. Of course they are, because there's so few wins that are, you know, that jump out to these bad teams. But correct me if I'm wrong, Rich, you're part of the ESPN family. You're right. You're there all the time. You know everybody. I feel like people that I trust and value, not that they're always right, but I feel like there's a lot more people who just cover the NFL, the Orlovskis, guys like that, that are lauding the Jets talent base a whole hell of a lot more than they are the Raiders, the Browns, the Dolphins. I think that there's a difference.
Yeah, I've heard some positive comments about the Jets on the air, but we also came out with our ESPN 100 top players today, which was voted on by all, you know, all our so-called experts at ESPN, and there were no Jets in the top 100. So you know, which is kind of a commentary on the talent base. I thought, you know, maybe a Breece Hall or a Garrett Wilson, you know, can sneak in there. And it's not based on last year. It's supposed to be based on, it's a predictive tool. So it's supposed to be the top 100 players for the coming season. And I certainly think Wilson and Hall would belong in that category, but they didn't make the ESPN top 100. So I think that might be a commentary on what a lot of people at my company think of the Jets this year.
It's a coaching league as well. Eddie in the comments nails it. Like, if the Jets had Sean Payton hypothetically as their head coach, you'd view the team differently. Aaron Glenn is viewed as, in that same ESPN story that came out a few weeks ago, the 32nd ranked coach in football going into the year. So that's why, true, I think getting some wins early, you change the narrative. All of a sudden you're scrappy. They were 6-3 with Salah in year 2. Mm-hmm. Is Aaron Glenn ever going to be 6-3? Like, we'd sign for that right now and have a real season. So that's kind of why I go back to how important week 1 is, as we've talked about a lot on the show. But Rich, I know we're short on time here, but we have to get to this because the Pro Bowl was canceled, and you told us you had quite the story about the only Pro Bowl you ever covered in your illustrious career covering the Jets for the last 39 years full time.
Yeah, so the Pro Bowl was canceled a few days ago, which I thought was great, by the way. The Pro Bowl had become such a joke that needed to just go away. I covered one Pro Bowl. It was after the 1998 season, which, of course, was the year the Jets made the championship game. In those days, the losing team from the championship game, their coaching staff coached the Pro Bowl. So the Jets coaching staff, by virtue of the loss to Denver, was named to coach the Pro Bowl. And right after that happened, Parcells issued a statement saying, I'm out. You know, he had basically a note from his doctor saying he could go. We all know he didn't want to go because he doesn't like flying. So he didn't want to go all the way to Hawaii. So he's out. And Belichick is the head coach of the AFC team. And the entire Jet coaching staff is going over there. I was working for the Daily News. They said, go to the Pro Bowl. And I thought this is going to be great because Belichick hadn't done an interview in months. And I mean, this was before there were rules that mandated that assistant coaches had to talk. In those days, there were no rules. Parcells would not let his assistants talk to the media. So I'm thinking, I got the exclusive on Belichick. He hasn't talked in like before the season. So I fly from Miami, site of the Super Bowl, all the way to Honolulu. Next morning, real early, get out on the practice field after practice. And when I say practice, it lasted about 15 minutes. You know, they didn't do a lot of practicing at the Pro Bowl. I go up to Belichick on the field and I said, hey, Bill, got a few minutes to talk about the season. And he goes, I can't talk to you about the Jets. And I'm like, what? I just flew 6,000 miles to do this interview. And he goes, I can't. He goes, I'm under instructions from Parcells. I can only talk about the Pro Bowl. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. And he goes, you know what? He goes, meet me outside the locker room in about 15 minutes. I'm like, okay. And to his credit, you know, Belichick was a nicer guy than people gave him credit for. He goes, okay, I'll do the interview. And we sat down and he did a really good interview. And I think part of it was because he just wanted to spite Parcells. You know, they weren't getting along that great back in those days. And so this might have been like a little jab at the big man. So he sat down, he talked about the loss in Denver and how he was named the heir apparent, you know, and at that particular time he was looking forward to taking over for Parcells. So I got this really good interview, and the team, and just a real quick PS on the story. So Parcells also told the Jet contingent, don't spend any money out there. Don't have any parties. Don't have any fun. Just go and come back. So what did the Jets people do? They organized a big luau at just defying Parcells. And so they invited me and a reporter for Newsday, the only two people from New York. We got invited to the luau and we're all dressed up in our Hawaiian shirts. We got lays on and doing the whole thing. And I took a picture, and I would pay any amount of money to have this picture. But a professional photographer was there and took a picture of me and Belichick and the reporter from Newsday with our arms around each other, holding up our Mai Tais at
Mai Tais,
this Hawaiian luau.
Wow.
And I don't know where that picture is. Maybe it's maybe somewhere out there. Yeah. But we had a blast. And as they were taking the pictures, I could hear Belichick say under his breath, I wish Parcells could see us now.
Wow.
And we had a great time out there. You know, when the cat's away, the mice play, I guess. And it was just a really fun experience being out there for the Pro Bowl.
I might be getting the years mixed up. Didn't Keyshawn win the MVP in one of those games?
Yeah, he did, because it was a tie. I think he actually tied Ty Law in the voting. Only about 10 people voted. Uh-huh. And I voted for Keyshawn. Had I gone the other way, he wouldn't have even got the tie. So all he owes me half that trophy.
Wow.
So Rich was getting laid in Hawaii. That boy, Rich.
It was a fun trip. My only Pro Bowl.
And maybe that's probably the only opportunity you'll ever get to cover a Pro Bowl, as RIP to the NFL's Pro Bowl. What an episode, gentlemen. This was a lot of fun. We're getting closer and closer to week one, Jets Titans. I saw the Jets tweeted out a picture of Joe Namath today in honor of the fact it's just 12 days away. So we're almost there. The Jets Collective will be there every step of the way. Make sure, again, you like the video, and more importantly, you are subscribed to us here on YouTube. Check out the show wherever you get your podcast in audio form. And for Rich Samidi and Brandon Tierney, this is Jake Asman saying have a great rest of your week. We'll talk to you soon on the Jets Collective.